Community and Regional Affairs Senate is going to meet this afternoon. With us today, we have Senator Thomas, Senator Wagner, Senator Kukish, Senator Stevens, and myself, Senator Olson. Today, we have before us committee substitute for Senate Bill 16, extending the Regulatory Commission of Alaska /P. Is there a motion to accept the CS?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Without objection, we'll go ahead and work off of /E. And everybody has a copy of it? Okay. We'll have Senator Terrio go ahead and address the committee substitute. Senator Terrio, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Senator Gene Terrio, Senate District F. The CS that's before you incorporates what was discussed at the last committee. If you look on page 2, the new language there in subsection 10 is a request for the audit, our audit shop and legislative budget and audit, to do a review every 2 years on whether the commission is adhering to their statutory deadlines, and just sort of a snapshot. It wouldn't be a full audit like we have when they get to a sunset. That, in my opinion, would be wasteful use of the auditor's resources, but it would sort of go in and sort of give a report card on how the commission is doing as far as moving dockets through the system, meeting the deadlines, how often they're using their power to extend deadlines, things of that nature. So I think that will help to assure that they continually move to a more and more efficient operation. Also on section 4, as was discussed last year or last time, if you'll remember, the initial bill suggested the 8-year extension, which was the default language that the auditor had suggested. That was my beginning point, just to get their recommendation on the record. There was some concern that the 8 years is too long, and so it's been rolled back in the proposed CS2, a 6-year extension. And so those are the two changes. Your staff, Mr. Chairman, was good enough to let me know that they had been in touch with Pat Davidson of the audit shop on the language that appears in page 2. I did read it over. It appeared to, get at what the committee discussion centered around last time. So I appreciate your willingness to have your staff keep my office up to speed of what was being considered. I know Ms. Davidson is here to testify about the recommended language there.
Are there any questions of the committee for the bill sponsor? Senator Stevens, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I was just trying to recall the discussion we had, Senator Terrio. Some of the recommendations were for 8 years, 5 years, and then I think the RC actually asked for a 6-year extension, and that's your best guess of what would work.
Right. So that's what we have now is 6 years. I think if we're going to have a 2-year review, we want to keep it, so it's divisible by two, so that they're not doing this report card, so it matches up. So I think we just deal with multiples of two. It's best.
Thank you.
Any further questions of the bill sponsor? I have a question. As you look at these audits and the frequency of them, what does that do to the fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that it will impact the fiscal note. We have budgeted our audit shop. I mean, that budget is already in our ongoing operations of the legislature. Generally, the fiscal notes are something that trigger an increase or a decrease to the normal ongoing budget. So I don't think, we've got the fiscal note here dealing with RCA, but as far as the impact of our audit shop, it shouldn't have any impact. Okay. But Ms. Davidson can answer that specifically.
I'll go ahead and ask her that question at the appropriate time. Okay, if there's no further questions, we'll ask Kate Guyard, the chairperson of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, to come on up and address it and speak, especially to the committee substitute, if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kate Guyard. I'm the chair of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I believe that the committee substitute will balance both the need for stability in terms of the number of years that you've elected to put on the add to the reauthorization. I think that creates a significant degree of stability for the agency and for the state as a whole. And I do believe that the two-year audits are very very wise and responsible, and it will make sure that the agency is keeping track and keeping on track with the mission that it has. So I'm very supportive of these, and I appreciate the committee substitute.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, there were questions from the last hearing that you had asked, and I do have those responses to the questions
if you would
that were
go
posed
ahead, please.
To me, if you would like me to provide them now. I've handed out to the committee our published annual report, and we modified that report to a degree based on some of the questions that were asked. I was asked how many statutory extensions the commission had had gone through. We have on page 6 of the annual report put together for you the summary of statutory extensions that we have authorized. Statutory extensions can either be at the request of the parties. If all the parties agree, we can extend and we can determine an extension. And if the RCA sees a need to extend the statutory timeline, you've given us a one-time 90-day extension. So we show you that on page 6, and we also provide information about what we've done in the past. You'll note that parties and the RCA both extend for various reasons, but we've given you the docket numbers so that if anybody wants to go and on page 6, they can go take a look at those dockets. We also report this information to legislative audit and budget on a quarterly basis. So that information is there. You also asked for information regarding Senator Thomas asked the number of decisions made, and we have something on page 75 of the annual report, which we added. It talks about commission proceedings, so you can get a sense of the activity that's going on page 75 of the annual report. That will show you the number of decisions that the commission made. And it's in the middle, and it's a bar graph. We talk about the number of decisions that we've made over the year. There's substantive final decisions. That's generally after a rate case or at the very end of a matter. A substantive non-final, which is a decision when parties disagree on something in the middle of a process, they come to us and we issue a decision. We call them non-substantive non-final. And then there's procedural decisions, which the administrative law judges make or we affirm. Those are the different kinds of decisions and the number of decisions that we make. Also talks about the number of dockets that we have, so this information will be available to you to track. Are we keeping up with the pipeline, which has been a problem in the past? So we try to show you not only what's pending at the beginning of the year, so what we've got on our plate, how many cases came to us, the number that we closed during the fiscal year, and then how many we have residing at the end of the fiscal year, Mr. Chairman.
And where's that at, Ms.?
Mr. Chairman, that's on page 75 of the annual report, and it's in the chart on the very top. It says number of dockets.
Okay, I got you. Senator Wagner.
Maybe Commissioner Guyard was going to get there, but under letter orders issued,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm going to ask?
What's a letter
order? No. Why the uptick in FY05 compared to 04 and 06?
Mr. Chairman, letter orders are documents which are issued by our staff. They're not orders of the commission, and they will go up if there's the number of applications have filed. Generally, a letter order is a letter that can go out if an application isn't complete or if there's correspondence that needs to go back and forth between an applicant or a filing person and tariffs or our staff. So they would have gone up
that year
if there was more business going on or if there were more applications filed or there were more questions. We don't really track letter orders in terms of the overall production of the agency that closely. We really look at our adjudicatory decisions.
Thank you.
There are a few other questions that were asked about the cases that were appealed that we have, and we've put an entire section in this for the first time. I'm going to just take a moment and walk you through it. How many, the question was answered, how many appeals do we have and how many have we had remanded, but I wanted to take a moment on page 54 of the annual report. We went and we listed for you the number of appeals, and it's a bit overwhelming to look at them. They take up a number of pages. Most of what you see are individual appeals of the TAPS owners, the TAPS line owners. They'll individually appeal our orders on a case-by-case basis, and sometimes they appeal them to Superior Court, sometimes they then appeal them up to the Supreme Court. So most what we've done is try to write you a comprehensive, these are all the appeals about Quality Bank. Quality Bank's been appealed since 1986 all the way up through. So those are all matters that are continuing to go through. And then we have listed for you, it's a bit confusing on the pipeline matters, but if you turn to, you begin to get into utility matters at page 57, and we've tried to describe to you in detail what those appeals were about, so you would have some understanding of the process that is going on right now in appeals. So this is a first reiteration of, and after you've finished doing it, you get a chance to look at your own work, and I think more work needs to be done to communicate with you on our appeals, and we can probably do a better job than even this, but this was an attempt to put that information out there, and I think we also then showed you kind of, we gave you more information this year than ever before on how many utilities are certificated. That starts on page 22. It runs through, so you have an idea of the what we do in terms of who's certificated in the state of Alaska. We broke it down for you between economically regulated, where we set the rates, and exempt from economic regulation, but they do have to meet safety standards and service area standards and other standards that we apply to them. So there's a distinction here for you. And pages 22 through 26 are economically regulated. They would file with us on a rate case basis. And 26 on forward are certificates that we have in place where we have a role, but we do not economically regulate them. Then we gave you much more detail about significant events and telecommunications, because many of you had comments on telecommunications. So the report has much more about competitive entry in the markets. And I'm happy to go through this with your staff or take another whole meeting to do it, but I did want to just let you know that we answered some of the questions in the annual report.
Any questions of the committee for Ms. Guyard? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Senator Olson. What would be an example of just short form of what you would do if you're not regulating the economics of somebody? What would you be regulating with the exempt from economic regulation?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, we would still regulate the service area. So if a utility wanted to expand its service area or contract its service area for any reason, they'd have to come through us. We have safety requirements that they would have to meet for their plant and their operations and the overall management. So we still have pretty much jurisdiction over them, but they do not have to come to us for a rate change. In your area, a good example of that is Aurora. Aurora has the steam heat.
Right.
And they are not economically regulated, but they file with us and let us know when they are changing their rates, and we still have jurisdiction over them.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions of Ms. Guyard? Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, we had a pretty wide-ranging discussion last time and covered a lot of material, and since we don't get a chance to actually see you very often, where do we go from here in some of the areas that we talked about, such as requiring more professional requirements for commissioners, considerations of salary, shortening the time for the time for rate cases, and also there was the issue of a chief of staff or executive officer.
Right.
Where do we go from here to get to those solutions?
Through the chair, I handed out, or Ms. Osterman may have handed out the, oh no, perhaps we have available for you copies. Yes, ma'am, if you wouldn't mind, and I gave you my copy as well.
Thank you.
We have for you copies of the statutory revisions that we took through the public process. And I gave a speech today at the Alaska Power Association, went over them. These are the, this is the final order on the statutory revisions that we're recommending to the governor that she bring forward in a bill. And I submitted this to the governor's office, and they immediately began working on it. And so they, I had conversation with them, and they are, they had a little bit of business to transact this week with the gas line legislation, and we'll be working on our legislation, I think, next week and the week after. So what you have in here, beginning on page 6 of 60, Mr. Chairman, are the proposed statutory changes that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska recommended to the governor that she consider embodying in legislation and presenting it to you this in the next couple of weeks. The first is to increase the regulatory cost charge limit from 7 to 9 so that we are able to fund the PERS liability that we absorbed into fiscal 2008 in our budget. The next is to, on page 8 of 16, is to increase civil penalties. They're at $100. We increase them to up to $1,000. The third is to amend statutory timelines, which has a lot of interest. What we intend to do, propose to the governor, is that she propose legislation that puts a 12-month timeline on everything that currently doesn't have a timeline. You find that on page 10 of 16. This was a recommendation of the utilities. They would like a 12-month timeline. This does not address the move and the change from the 15-month timeline that we talked about last time down to the 12-month, because we didn't know that that proposal was out there. Next is an Office of General Counsel. I think we've talked to you about the relationship that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska has with the Attorney General coming before us, and also acting in adjudication with us. The next, page 12 of 16, is a continuation of the changes that would be made if we did have an Office of General Counsel. The next 13 of 16 are some administrative, putting in an administrative law section, so we are very distinct from the Office of Administrative Hearings. Putting in a natural gas and oil pipeline section. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska, Mr. Chairman, is treated as a division of the Department of Commerce, and therefore we do not have access to certain personnel that a department director would have. A department director can have an executive secretary. I have no secretary. So we just want to modify this to allow the Regulatory Commission to be on the same level in terms of the ability to get personnel as a department. Last but not least are the commissioner qualifications and commissioner salary. The commission did not vote any salary proposals to you because we felt that it was a conflict for us to go forward and propose to you. So we know that you're going to take care of that, and I'm not worried about it. The qualifications is drafted here to answer your question, Senator Stevens. I talked to the APA today, and I think that they were concerned that we would only want lawyers and CPAs and really exclude from the candidate group people who worked for utilities. But under item number 3, actual executive level experience for 5 years substitutes for the more the professional qualifications that we have. So what we want is those CEOs of utilities to want to be a commissioner. So we put that in there, and anybody who's had executive experience can come, and they're used to making decisions. They can make these decisions. Any of us can make these decisions. So that hopefully that answers your question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wagner.
In a way, this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek statement, but in a way, it really isn't, because I've read your qualifications.
Yep.
And the way I read these qualifications, Bill Gates couldn't become a commissioner on our commission.
Mr. Chairman, Bill Gates certainly would, because he's got actual executive-level experience under item number 3. Actual executive-level experience for a period of 5 years. Business administration, you know, basically in anything.
Well, I guess that's the way it's written, then, is what confused me, because I followed down 1, and at the end of C on 1, it said and. So to me, that would say, and in addition to all of the above could have this other, but maybe it needs some restructuring there.
Fair enough. We'll let legal do their magic on it or something. But the intention is that you have a very wide pool of executive leaders in the state that want to do this job.
Okay. I'll accept that then.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions of Ms. Guyard? The statutory changes is one of the things that my office has got a number of calls on and questions about. And concerns about as well. And I was wondering if the bill sponsor has had a chance to review the statutory changes and whether he was in favor of it or not. Do you care to comment, Senator Theriault?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My staff and I only got a copy of this document, I think, just yesterday. So we haven't had a chance to go through it all. It's our understanding that there are some out in the regulated community that still haven't had a chance to work through this either and may have suggestions, whether in fact they've been making comments to the third floor, if they intend to put in a bill, and whether the third floor is just going to accept this all as written or make modifications. The Department of Law may have suggested some changes. I'm not aware of those at this point, just because I haven't had the document long enough, really.
You don't see anything glaring, Senator Theriault, that's it puts red flags up for you?
Mr. Chairman, I really haven't had enough time to even this is probably the brief walkthrough that you had is the most time I've spent really with the document myself. So
thank you, Senator Curio. One last question for Ms. Guyard, if I could. As you look at page 22 and go on to page 26, you're dealing with the economically regulated utilities and pipelines as opposed to those that are exempt. Is it an option that a utility has that they can either be exempted or that they are economically regulated by the RCA?
Mr. Chairman, there's a provision in statute whereby any regulated utility can come to us and seek exemption from regulation. It's in, I should be able to quote it, but I believe it's 4205-175.
And if somebody is exempt from you, can they go over to the side that isn't exempt from you and vice versa? If they are regulated by you, that they can move on over to the exempted side?
They can, Mr. Chairman, they can petition to us to become regulated, and they can petition us to become unregulated. So there's a process whereby they can petition us to become unregulated if they are regulated. The cooperatives, for example.
And why are they allowed?
Everyone is allowed to petition us and seek an exemption from regulation. Currently, I believe there may be an application coming forward by Alaska Waste, which would like to come out from underneath regulation for commercial activities. Mm-hmm. Now, they may. They are allowed to petition us and say, look, based on this evidence, you shouldn't regulate us. And the public will come in, the public advocate will come in and say, yay or nay, and we'll have a hearing and make a decision on the matter. So that any utility has that option.
So if
Mr. Chairman, I want to correct and make sure that you understand that no pipeline carrier has that option. The Alaska law is written so that if you are a common carrier pipeline under 3805, you are regulated by the RCA and there are no exemptions.
Okay. So if an entity has an adverse ruling by your commission, can they opt out of that then?
Mr. Chairman, they cannot opt out just because they don't like a ruling. They can appeal that to the Superior Court, and as you can see in here, many do.
I understand.
But they They have to come to us, like AWWU can come to us and say, we want to be out from underneath regulation. You've built that into the statutes that you have.
Okay.
And they petition us, and we look at it and make a decision. Now, we may say no because of this record, and then they would very likely come down here and say, look, take us out anyway, or we don't like that answer. But those are the two avenues. You have built in a process within the statutes that you wrote for us that allow them to come to us and seek out from underneath regulation, seek exemption.
So since you've been on the RCA, how many entities have opted out to be exempted from the RCA?
Mr. Chairman, several cooperatives have had election. Kodiak, utility in Kodiak, they have elections to come out from underneath regulation if they're cooperatives.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to tell you, cooperatives, member utilities like Golden Valley, we probably wouldn't let Chugach out because it has these all wholesale arrangements, but Homer Electric Utility, all of the cooperative electric utilities have the option of having their members vote them out, and you can have a member election to take you out of regulation. So when they tell me that they want to come down here and come out from underneath regulation, I say, let your members vote, because they all have that authority.
Okay. Okay, any further questions of the chairman? Thank you very much, Ms. Gaillard. We've got online Pat Luby with the AARP who wants to go ahead and testify to Senate Bill 16. Mr. Luby, are you on?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. AARP encourages you to vote in favor of Senator Terrio's SB 16 to extend the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Historically, I think the RCA has been perceived as the referee in telephone competition wars and the state agency that has oversight on all utility issues. From AARP's perspective, we look at the RCA as our consumer watchdog. The RCA commissioners, their staff, and the Attorney General's staff assigned to RCA issues are the only thing standing between customers and all the utility companies. The RCA is there to review every rate case to determine if it is justified or excessive. As recently as this morning, I sat in a courtroom here in Anchorage and listened to an assistant attorney general and an RCA attorney argue a water case on behalf of Anchorage customers. Consumers need the RCA. All Alaskan families need it to be reauthorized. We ask for your aye vote on SB 16. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Luby. Do you have any questions of the committee for Mr. Luby? If not, we'll go ahead and have Pat Davidson come on up then. She's available for questions as well as anything she might want to say. Ms. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank your staff for giving me a preview of this committee substitute so I could take a look at it and see how it was affecting the legislative audit statutes. And it is clear on its face what is intended. And I would agree with the assessment that this is not a complex audit that we're being asked to do every 2 years. The fact that the information will be published in an annual report puts the onus really on the commission for producing the information, and ours will be a simple verification. And so I would agree that this is not an onerous audit effort.
Do you remember the question I asked Senator Terrio about the effect on the fiscal note that these audits would have? Can you just comment on that, or do you agree with it?
Senator Olson, Mr. Chairman, the budget and audit, or the Division of Legislative Audit, provides audit services. About 60% of our workload is statutorily driven, typically with statutory deadlines associated with it. The other about 40% is audit requests that are approved by the Budget and Audit Committee. And the only thing that this will do is it will move this ahead of those Budget and Audit Committee requests. And so within the framework of resources that we've been given to provide these audit services, they'll just go in in with the rest of the work that we have. So similar to a request that comes through the Budget and Audit Committee, doesn't have a fiscal note with it, typically these wouldn't either.
So we won't see a supplementary addition up in finance or another addition of staff?
Mr. Chairman, anytime the legislature wants more audit services, we're happy to oblige. But if you like the level of audit services that you're getting right now, then we'll just be coming in with a maintenance budget.
Any further questions of Ms. Davidson from the committee? Thank you very much, Ms. Davidson.
Bless the governor's cut.
This afternoon, we also have Frank Corbin from Dillingham, who wants to go ahead and testify. Please come on up to the microphone, Mr. Corbin, and state your name for the record, who you're affiliated with, and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee. My name is Frank Corbin. I'm the general manager for Nishgat Cooperative in Dillingham. And first disclaimer is we are one of those cooperatives that has the membership has exempted out from under regulation of the RCA. We do both electric and telephone, cable TV, and internet as well. But even though we're deregulated, I guess would be the term, we still file reports and we're still subject to what comes forth from the commission. So I would say with that disclaimer in place that the first and primary question today is the bill, and we support the 6-year time frame as the most logical. And I guess the worst case scenario, with apologies to the commissioner, is the devil you know. So moving on, I'd like to address a couple of the other issues that have come up in this hearing. I watched on Gavel to Gavel here week 4 last. In regards to qualifications, I would say as a businessman that position qualifications are always the minimum qualifications for that position. And as you raise the bar, so to speak, the only reason to do so is to limit and to exclude people. And in my case, the fear would be that at some point you end up with some elite social club that nobody can get into. So we caution all concerns in that regard. And for those who were at the Alaska Power Association meeting yesterday, I expressed some of my opinions, and I've already had some feedback from that group. And one of the other issues about
qualifications. Can we just ask positive or negative? No comment. Okay, I understand.
I will share it with you, and you can make up your own mind.
Go ahead with your testimony, Mr. Corbin.
One of the other concerns that had not occurred to me at the time was the fear that steeper qualifications might I'm trying to think of the right word, but I want to be careful here. Might affect legislative vigilance, and indeed become a substitute for oversight, and I hadn't even thought of that as a perspective, but that was another perspective on qualifications. Mm-hmm. So, which leads right into the pay issue, and I have to agree with that because you get what you pay for, and on several fronts, I believe if you have minimum qualifications, and then you have a salary range available, then you can attract people who have more qualifications than just the minimum. And again, there are several ways to approach that, but this is probably not the place. But I do agree with the salary, and I do agree with the concept of having former utility executives being available for commission positions in light of the number of ex-commissioners that have gone to work in the utility industry. So a couple other issues I'd like to address since I have the seat. Competition is all the buzzword everywhere. And I would like to remind everybody that that's nothing new. This is a capitalist country, and we've had competition for a couple hundred years. And what has developed out of that is a social construct. And you can call it a safety net, you can call it a floor, you can call it a ceiling, you can call it whatever you want. But the economic fact is that there is some point upon which competition does not address, and that individuals within our society have agreed to this point that's a social responsibility that different government entities take upon themselves to address those areas where competition is not the answer. And that sort of tipping point, or however you want to describe it, is evident even in the difference in the utilities that exempt themselves out from under regulation. That's a financial burden, and at some point those cooperatives have decided that there's no return on their investment, and they have made their decision, and the co-op members have voted, and so it's gone. So that that floor, depending on which side of the net you're on, it's either a ceiling or a floor. It exists, it's real, and it's economic. And I ask for consideration of that. And the competition topic brings me to another issue. Nishigat Cooperative was involved in protesting the Yukon-Crowley merger. And I would like to relate some testimony that I personally observed. And one was the, I believe it was the state attorney general or his representative, who mentioned that the monopoly in that industry in that region was a good thing for the state. I believe his thought was that there wasn't enough market for competition, and so monopoly was more efficient. And there were some other comments made, and I started asking around, and I've asked around Juneau as well through my Senator Hoffman's office. And the thought being, as I understood it, that the Attorney General's comments were interpreted at one time, the Public Utilities Commission, the precedent, had on its charter the responsibility for regulating monopoly fuel suppliers, and that concept was not renewed with the RCA. So that might bear another look, and I'll tell you why. Again, testimony I heard in that is we were assured that there was still the semblance of competition because, for example, Delta Western could lease space from Crowley in Bethel, and therefore there would be two fuel resellers in Bethel. And when the Western representative was questioned about that business arrangement, his reply was, it didn't matter how much Crowley charged him, the profits in Bethel were so deep. And that was allowed to stand. And there were some other issues with the agreement was based on conditions that basically once you're out of there, then it's a open market, and the conditions were changed immediately. And Mr. Reeve is here, and he knows more about that whole operation than I do. I'm late to the table. But I guess that's where I'd like to end my testimony, is if we're talking about other issues with the RCA, and I think that's a serious one for the Bush.
So, Mr. Corman, if I'm hearing you correctly, you want to go to the RCA to start looking at the fuel retailers as a utility that they can regulate, as it was under the APUC?
Well, I'm not sure. Again, now I'm a young man, so I can't say how it was under the APUC. Mm-hmm. but we would like some relief out there in some form, and we have asked everywhere, and everywhere we go, including the State Attorney General's office, they say, well, the Regulatory Commission is the answer, and then I get there, and that's not the answer. So.
Any further questions of Mr. Corbin from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Corbin. Next, we have Brad Reeves from Kotzebue Electric to go ahead and testify on this subject. Mr. Reeves, please. I guess it's Mr. Reeve, isn't it?
Chairman Olson, Senators, I'm Brad Reeve, General Manager of Kotzebue Electric Association, and also the President of the Alaska Power Association. Under the hat of the Kotzebue Electric, our utility deregulated economically from the Commission back in 1993 under the APUC. But primarily my role with relations with the APA and the RCA have been is as a trade association. We have worked with the RCA and worked jointly to develop guidelines. I will say that under Chairperson Guyard that we're seeing an improvement of things. We had a discussion with the chairperson today about the direction of the RCA and where they're going and some of the new statutes. And note for you that we've had that our concerns have been listened to. We see a lot of the things that our attorney through Campbell Huffman and Ellis that represents us have been listened to, and they've responded to us quite well, and to the point where we really didn't have a whole lot of discussion as we have over past years about the relationship that we have had as an industry with the RCA. So I'll just pass on that we are seeing, I think, more transparency. We're seeing some good examples of how better to deal with the utilities and to meet deadlines, guidelines, and things that I think has been a pleasant, much more pleasant experience dealing with a regulatory agency than we have in the past. When we decided to deregulate back in 93, it was very expensive for us. All hearings were in Anchorage. We really felt that our community had no voice into the process. And it was because of those reasons and the prior APUC that really didn't give us much ability for members of our utility to have input that we did deregulate. But on the APA side, we are seeing improvement, better transparency, deadlines moving forward. And so I just wanted to comment that the relationship, I think, has greatly improved over the last few years, and we enjoy seeing that direction continue.
Any further questions of...
Nice time.
Mr. Reeve.
Yes.
I've got a question for you. It's alluded to by Mr. Corbin. It had to do with the financial burden that's put on some of these cooperatives that are out there. Can you give me an idea on what the magnitude of that burden is?
Back at the time that we were regulated, when we would do a rate filing, it could run $40,000 to $80,000 for us. It was quite expensive by the time we got attorneys involved and accountants and back and forth to different hearings and what. So it was a real financial burden to what we were doing for our small utility in our community. And at the same time, really, our members were excluded from any input at the time. So it was for us, under the cooperative statutes, we were given the right to deregulate. Our membership did vote to do that in 93, and we've found that to work well for us, although we do have the safety regulations due, as Chairperson Guyard mentioned, we still fall under the auspices there. We have a relationship with them when dealing with power cost equalization and our reports we put in there, and that's been satisfactory.
Okay. Have you had a chance to take a look at the statutory changes that have been proposed by the RCA? And if, since we know the statutes can be far-reaching, certainly could reach to you, and I looks like you got certificate number 17, is that right? And so that's an early certificate. So be that as it may, what do you think of the statutory changes? I know you've probably not a lot
of time to review them. We did go through them somewhat with the chairperson today. She did go through those with us. They have been reviewed by our attorney, and although I think his words were that isn't exactly the way I would have written them, but they are acceptable.
So the intent of the statutory changes are acceptable for small utilities such as yourself out in rural Alaska?
Yeah, at this point, yes.
Any further questions of the committee for Mr. Reeve? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Chairman Olson. Since you're not regulated, what process do you go through to raise your rates then?
What we do is we have two public hearings in Kotzebue, and so we advertise locally and in the newspaper. Our board of directors acts as the adjudicator. I present a case to the board of directors, allowing any of our membership to attend both of those meetings, and then I have to build the case at the along with our auditor and other professional staff that I bring in to make the case that we need an increase.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Reeve? Thank you very much, Mr. Reeve.
Thank you.
My intent is to move the bill out this afternoon. If we have some closing comments from the bill sponsor, I'd be glad to go ahead and hear them at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the CS that is before you is a reasonable way of going about making the policy call on the extension. And it's been gratifying to me, having been involved in the change from the APUC to the RCA a number of years ago, to hear, as Senator Stevens and I presented with President Green the other day to the the power companies. Afterwards, a number of people came up and said, it is so much better than it was years ago. And so that, having been part of that change, as were a number of you, that's certainly gratifying to hear. So the policy call on how long to extend, first, are we going to extend the RCA, or is that a function that we want to take on as the legislature? I think clearly we don't want to take that function on as the legislature, and so extending them makes sense. How long? I think we've crafted something that is viewed as reasonable. The two-year sort of report card, I think, is reasonable. It does beg the question, though, of what to do with all these other changes. And perhaps, Mr. Chairman, you and myself need to have some conversations with somebody from the administration on that, perhaps independent bill or a committee bill, or maybe the administration is going to put something in. We probably need to figure out how to get these ideas on the table for discussion at the very least. But I appreciate the work that you and your staff have done with me on that policy call of whether to extend and for how long.
Okay. With that, I'll go ahead and entertain a motion.
I'd move CS for Senate Bill number 16 be passed out of committee with individual recommendations.
Okay, any objection? There's no objections, then we'll go ahead and pass this on to the next committee. Anything else to come before the committee this afternoon? Okay, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr.